Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to part two with the Dean and EJ, the Books Boys.
Woo! Whoa, baby!
But first, before I do that, you're going to take another turn, PJ, because you told me you were reading an interesting magazine.
That's right. So I'm reading a Speak Up Sis magazine. It's basically not quite the first magazine yet. It's an introduction to the first magazine that's appearing in the winter time. And basically, these are real life stories. And I like the idea. It's basically, this company is based in Georgia, in Atlanta, or at least that is where the chief and editor is from. And what they've done here is that they've compiled stories or compiled real life anecdotes, essays, kind of opinions by real women. And I think it's very refreshing. Even the title, Speak Up Sis, it's already saying a lot. It's saying, you know, say
sounds
something.
Sounds good, PJ, but if you bear with me, I think we were getting a call.
Oh.
Hello, you're through to Books Boys. You got Dean and PJ on the line. Who's calling?
Hi, this is Angel Charmaine.
Oh my god!
People Speak Up Sis magazine. How are y'all?
Awesome. We're good. These coincidences, they never stop, PJ.
Well, this is crazy. You're calling up. We were just talking about you and the great stuff you've done. Do you want to tell us more about Speak Up Sis and about yourself?
Yeah. So first, how are y'all doing?
We're good. We're halfway through another lengthy episode of plenty of books. I read too much.
Controversial opinions. And he seems to not appreciate my love for Dr. Seuss. Only if we call him after his German name, Theodor Seussel, then he kind of seems to appreciate it.
Oh my goodness, Theodore.
What about yourself? You're amidst rain and winds and turmoil, right?
Yes, I am. Right now, Hurricane Ian is flying past the coast of Georgia, but I don't think I'm going to get any of that. So it's a good thing because I get to call in and talk to you all just a little bit. So thank you.
We're very fortunate. So tell us about the magazine. I think that you had mentioned when I was reading it and I was looking around the site that this is really the product of several years worth of labor and planning. So how did it all come about?
Yeah, so I resigned from my career in education in July of 2018, and I started a company as an entrepreneur in August of 2018. And I created for women what I needed for myself at the time, and that was community. I needed a space, and I needed the opportunity to share some of the hard things of life that I was travailing. And so I created this space and I invited other women in so that we could have real, honest, heart-to-heart conversations. And so the magazine was born out of that. I've grassroots built the Speak Up Sis community. And so now this magazine, it's, I guess I can liken it to an Essence or an Ebony or a Jet magazine without the celebrity. Mm-hmm. This magazine is designed for everyday women to see themselves and to be inspired by the stories of other everyday women. And so it's been about a 4-year journey to the magazine.
Wow, And you've also written and published books. Was that before or during that?
My very first book was written while I was still traditionally employed, and the others came afterward. But that first book was sort of the do it, I call it do it scared until you can do it brave moment. And I taught literature, I read books, but just because you like to read books doesn't mean you're going to be a good author.
I can vouch for that. I read, you know, 6 books a month, and I've never even attempted to write one. So I can vouch for that.
Yes. So that was my, I know there's something in me to write. I have something to say, but I don't really know how to do it. I don't really know how to go about it. And I did all the research and all that good stuff. And I just stepped out there and said, okay, I'm going to do it. So I decided I'm in the midst of my journey. I'm right in the heart of it. So I wanted to write a memoir, but it's hard to write a memoir when you're still living the climax.
That's fair.
So I decided there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I decided to create conversational narratives. And so I remix the memoir. I tell my story in bite-sized pieces of 10 short conversational prose pieces in one book. And so each book of the series includes these 10 conversational narratives where I share true stories, my life, and where I am currently in my life, things that I've learned from. And so people get to read about my life, but they're reading it in little bites.
So it's more like, yeah, it's not a complete memoir. It's like snapshots and sort of conversations.
Okay.
Yes. And would your intention be that you just right now, you don't want to wait until you're older, but right now you want to inspire women who are maybe in the place you were in even just last year, or even like right now, and you're trying to solve it? Is that your intention?
Exactly. Exactly. Sometimes I believe it's difficult for people to feel like they can actually do a thing when they're watching you as a celebrity, because you're untouchable at that point. The majority of us don't really connect to celebrities. We want to be them, but they just seem sort of surreal to us, right? I think it is more helpful for people to be able to see you go through the journey, to be able to see you still in the struggle, because they can relate to that. And so to see my stories written, to read them, and to see me right now and be able to actually access me and touch me and know that I'm real and I'm human and I'm right here with them, yet everything that I'm talking about, they see it in the writing that I've gone through it, but then they're watching me as I grow. So it looks attainable.
Yeah, so it's not, here is the finished product of a successful celebrity. It is, we're actually seeing someone go through the journey, and we feel that we can maybe relate a little bit more and empathize with that. And it's helpful to ourselves then as well. That's the idea, right?
And yeah. Women need this, you know, women everywhere in the world need this of all ages. So it can definitely help. And now we speak to, I suppose it's many women can help other women. So everyday women, and they can help everyday women too, right? I suppose, yeah, the whole kind of celebrity thing and or even famous male authors, female authors, you just feel, well, you know, they're from another world. So I'm never even going to try.
No, we were both pretty lucky. You know, we didn't grow up in a place that had a rich celebrity culture, like maybe parts of America would have. You know, I'm in Northern Ireland, PJ's in Gran Canaria. There's not that many kind of rich, famous celebrities in these two areas. I think that celebrity culture is not always great. And, you know, it's good that you're bringing something a bit more real, you know.
Yeah, it's needed. And not only and everyday women, but I actually target a specific subsection of women. And we don't really like to use this word as women, but I'm going to call it what it is, aged women or seasoned women or women of a certain age. You know, we can spin it however we like. I believe the stories, the lived experiences, the life lessons of women who are sitting in the heart of being mom today, wife today, girlfriend today. They're at that age where they've got older parents that maybe they're caring for. We typically do not hear the voices of women between the ages of 35 and let's say 60. Because we're so busy taking care of our children, making sure our husbands are being ultra successful. We're trying to grow. We're trying to take care of our parents. We're trying to do all of these things. We just don't have time to talk to you until we're 70 years old and sharing wisdom. But I think that we've got things that we want to say. There are things that we need to say, and we need a space and opportunity to say those things. I believe there are 20 and 30 year old women who need to hear 40 and 50 year old women stories. They need to know what they're getting ready to come into, right? And they need to hear it from someone who's still relatively close to it, so that it's believable. And I just don't see spaces for women my age. I'm 45, just in case you're wondering. So it's rare that you see everyday 45-year-old women talking about anything because they're too busy making sure everybody else can talk about what they want to talk about.
So the primary objective was to get this space in this community.
I just want to mention...
go ahead, PJ.
Well, that's a great point, because I was just looking at the sequel from Sex in the City. And the whole point is, I think they're trying to make it maybe more kind of universal. So there are people of this LGBT plus and everything. But I think they're missing a point. I think personally, that is maybe even a damaging kind of portrayal of women in their middle age later years. I just feel like Hollywood or literature or culture in general just has no clue. And that woman above 40, well, maybe 40 to 60, as you were saying, they're completely just silenced and disrespected. And kind of society doesn't give them that respect. It might give someone who is clearly, you know, a grandmother figure, whatever that means, you know. Right. And if you're not a grandmother, then you're not respected either. That's terrible too, you know. It's all messed up.
Exactly. It's either you're a young hottie, dropping it like it's hot, right? And your body is perfect. Or not so perfect, but you're still young and spunky, right? Or like you said, you are this grandmama, this Madea, and you're wise, and you're this sage, and everybody just respects you. But then you're like, where is that whole group? You know, who are you once you aren't as perky? And who are you before you just know everything and are so wise? There's an entire group of women who are just silenced, and nobody, it just seems like nobody really cares. And I don't think that people don't care. I think that we're just so busy making the world just run. Like I said, at that age, you're making sure your children are okay. You don't have time to complain about you. You don't have time to take care of you. Because you got to take care of your kids, right? I don't have time to tell everybody what I need because I have sons in college. They need me. I don't have time to talk about, you know, the fact that, you know, I'm in the prime of my sex life, but I can't seem to meet a guy at 45, right? And so because I'm so busy taking care of my older parents. So there's so much that we want to say. Or you got the woman who's ultra successful, she's doing her thing, and yet she can't stop and say, at night, I cry at 2 o'clock in the morning because I was sexually abused when I was 5. Nobody really cares to hear anything that I have to say because I'm working so hard right now, and I got all these other people I need to take care of. I'll just sit my stuff to the side. There's an entire population of women who are sitting in that space, and speak up, sis, I love that you said you were attracted to the name. It's a call to action. It's not just the name of a business. It's a call to action. Like, sis, open up your mouth and speak right now at 35, 45, 65. This is your time. And this magazine is for those women. You can't even pay. This is not a paid space. People can't pay me to put articles. They can't be highlighted by paying me. It's free. I just review the articles to make sure that they fit with, you know, the heart of what we're doing. But I specifically go out and look for women who don't have a voice or who think they don't have a voice. And then I give them space and opportunity to talk in this magazine.
Well, and tell us a little bit more about what the magazine will actually entail then. So you're looking for these women, you know, are they going to be telling their story, or exactly what are the pieces going to be?
Yes, the heart of the magazine will be shared stories. The women can submit articles via the website. I'm not big on telling people what to write. I believe that people should speak in the way that feels comfortable for them. So if fitness is a thing, people can submit fitness articles. If faith is their thing, they can submit faith articles. The magazine will be sectioned, however, so people will be able to find what they're looking for easily. So there'll be a section for faith and fitness and finances and fun, right? Kind of that OFB. And then there will be articles. We'll decide based on what's submitted, what will go into those different sections. But they will come from everyday women, and I'm looking more for people to share their lived experiences in their articles. So even if it's an expert advice piece, there will need to be that component of, I understand this because I've lived this. Now let me share this with you. That's sort of what
it has to be personal, for. I guess.
It needs to be very personal, very, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm looking for people who are okay with being vulnerable.
Okay.
Very much needed, yeah. And you've talked about your writing being therapeutic for yourself, right? And you've taken sometimes years to write something just to get it, just to kind of trust it to be out there. So is that what you encourage others as well, right? That if they feel like it, they can be therapeutic and but also help others in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I believe that sharing stories helps to heal. It's kind of like when you think about someone who is being blackmailed, the only way that blackmail works is if you're quiet. That's the only way it works. If you're not ashamed of your story, then no one can blackmail you. You can't hold something against me that I've already told. Right.
Good point.
And so what I encourage is for people to acknowledge and own the truth of their lives. And then they get to control the narrative if they will just open up their mouths and share it. And in doing that, you get to release guilt, shame, self-condemnation, and all that ugliness. And while you're doing that, you sharing your story is actually the breakthrough that someone else needs to encourage them to do the same. So in hearing you share, it allows someone else to say, man, I'm going through the same thing. And if she made it and she can talk about it, she's not dying, right? Then I can do it. At the heart of my belief system, I believe that authentic conversations help to build resiliency in people. And when we can get to a place where we can just sit down and talk about things without all those funky feelings and people making you feel some kind of way, when you can get beyond that, then you can build those bounce back muscles. I think we would have a lot less depression and anxiety and feelings of hopelessness if people felt confident and comfortable to just talk and share and not hold that stuff in.
Good.
So yeah, most definitely.
Well, most importantly then, why don't you tell us the website where people can go and look, read a bit more and subscribe to the magazine?
Okay, speakupsismagazine.
There we go. I want to change tack real quick before we let you go, because you mentioned that you taught literature, and may not come as a massive surprise that we're both fans of that. What did you like to teach? What was your favorite kind of thing that you taught?
Oh, goodness. Let me see. There's so many. I actually like teaching short stories.
Okay.
One of my favorites that I taught was The Most Dangerous Game. I don't know if you all are familiar with The Most Dangerous Game with Rain.
I've heard of it, but I've not read it. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm trying to think which movie. There was a movie that sort of mirrored that. I think it was with Denzel Washington. Was it Fallen? This song, Time is on My Side. Anyway, it stuck in my head because it was. So anyway, what happened? They were hunting him.
Right.
And so this, The Most Dangerous Game, is about this guy named Rainsford who gets shipwrecked. And he notices that a gun sound, and it sounds like, you know, maybe there are hunters, but he recognizes the sound, the bullet is like, this sounds like a little gun, not a big gun, not a big game shooting. But anyway, he gets to this big palatial home on this island. He meets this aristocratic guy and everything seems cool. But what ends up happening is the guy actually gets people on the island and hunts them.
Oh,
so they become so humans are the big game. Anyway, kind of morbid, but it's really fun to teach, and the students really liked it. At first, they couldn't, you know, they were like, "What's the big game?" Is right, like, Rainsford is the game. So it's a game,
It's like a,
and yet he is the game, right? So anyway, that was one of
interesting
my favorites.
It's an interesting theme.
I looked it up there to see if I could find the movie, the Denzel movie, but apparently there is actually a...
Fallen?
I couldn't find it, but I did find that there's a TV show based on the short story as well. So apparently it's been adapted several times. Really? Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to have to find that
show. Well, PJ, do you have anything...
So yeah, short stories are my favorite.
Do you have anything else you'd like to ask PJ before we wrap up?
No, I just I think it's great what you're doing, and I really really recommend it. Looking forward to reading more of the magazine, and it's great that you're giving voices to these to this demographic, to these women. So keep doing it, and I hope it becomes maybe more international as well. But there's a lot to do in the US, I'm sure, but everywhere around the world, this is needed. So
Speak Up Sis is actually my company. It's Speak Up Sis LLC. The magazine is just
part
one
of that
space. We are an international company. I work with we've got people that we work with in some African countries, in Cameroon and Nigeria, and UAE. So yeah, we do things internationally. The magazine clearly is new. So we're working on, you all are my first international interview with the magazine. So I appreciate you all so much. You're making history today.
Who would have thought that? We thought we were just talking about books, PJ. Today we are the history.
You're there. One day you're going to go, you're going to say, oh my gosh, she was on our show.
Yeah, I know, like Angel Charmaine. I mean, this is amazing.
Well, that's us. Angel, thank you very, very much for calling in, and we look forward to reading some more.
Thank you. I appreciate you. You all have a wonderful day.
And you too. Thanks.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye. Well, that was a lovely, lovely surprise, as always. We love when everyone calls into the show, and any author should feel free to do that, particularly if we're talking about your stuff. PJ, as I was going to say before, I read this, and I'm only going to spend 2 or 3 minutes on this because it doesn't require much, but I said I really wanted to read something fun and exciting, and of course I chose Scenes of Clerical Life by George Eliot. And this is pretty boring stuff. I'm sure that doesn't come as a surprise. It's three novellas. Sorry. It's three novellas, and I'll just sort of say a minute or two on each one. But the idea is We get little snapshots into scenes of really their pastors and reverends and things in these small towns, in this like small town England, George Eliot style.
So it's Father Ted kind of.
Without the humor, maybe. So the first one is called right. Amos Barton. Now, I don't have a lot to say about this one. Basically, Amos Barton is the name of the pastor, right? And they're just in like a sleepy little market town, and there's not really a lot going on, but people complain about, oh, we got this preacher, but this other preacher's better, and all this kind of stuff. That's what happens in all of these stories. I mean, really, they're fairly boring. But the crux of the first one is a countess comes to stay for some reason. And the countess is staying with them, but she stays so long that people start to think, are they having an affair? And there's scandal and gossip. Oh. And the countess is the pastor's wife is starting to kind of be like, well, this is really putting me in a bad light. And there's all this gossip about my husband and all this kind of stuff. And then is she even going to believe it, you know? It's very easily solved. So the crisis is very, very quickly averted when the housekeeper lady just tells the countess to get out. She's like, you're ruining everything. You're terrible. You're bringing scandal on the family. And the countess is like, oh no, well, off I go then. Crisis averted.
And that's the story.
That's it.
All right. Well, okay. Well, okay.
So that's it, Jared. I'll do the second one last because I've actually got something to say about it. The third one, Janet's Repentance. It's the shortest of all. It's the longest, but I've got the least to say. It's really, really, very dull. This poor girl, Janet, she has a bad life. Her husband's mean to her. I think he physically beats her at times and she has to run off and seek refuge with her mother. So real issues are being dealt with. But there's just not really a lot happens, you know. And the husband's a vile chap. And at one point, someone tries to stand up to him and he takes his whip to the servant. He's like, why is my horse not ready? And he's like, well, I'll go get it now. He's like, ah, it's too late. And he whips him across the face, you know.
Yeah, and then, you owed my kingdom for a horse to Richard. Wow. Richard III kind of treatment here.
But the only
thing... This sounds very dull, you know.
That's not great.
How do you have to be patience? How do you have to be patience to read all this?
They're only 100 pages.
I was just... That's why I read Dr. Seuss, you know. I would try something like this. I do try and read other books, listeners, but like, yeah. I wouldn't have the patience to read all this nonsense.
The only thing I want to say about it is George Eliot does attempt humor once. At one point they're putting on a play, which everyone thinks is very moral, you know. And she tries to do Dickens and have the character names say something. And this isn't relevant to the story, it's just on a playbill. So she just pastes, there's a full page of just, this is the playbill. And it's... you know, Mr. Saintly Smoothface as Mr. Triadon, Mr. Worming Sneaker also as Mr. Triadon, Mr. All Grace No Work also as Mr. Triadon. So all these like, you know, silly names that are meant to say something. Mr. Foist Himself Everywhere, you know. So there's one attempt is made at a small amount of humor. But look, the only one that really deserves mentioning is Mr. Gilfil's love story. So this couple, this kind of rich English couple, they go to Italy, and then I can't remember why, but they just bring a kid home with them. They're just like, this kid looks like she needs help. They just bring her home to England. They don't adopt her because they think, well, she is sort of foreign, so we're not going to adopt her officially. We're just going to have this like Italian.
They sound like a lovely couple. The kind of couple you'd like to have with her.
In the end, as she grows up, they are very nice to her. And they do develop a nice bond with her, and they treat her like a daughter, even though it's not official.
Yeah, they keep a distance. It's just like you're not. Are they literally saying to the daughter every morning, "Just remember, you're not her daughter."
No, well,
get along. But
the father is more loving to her, and he calls her his little monkey, because she's always kind of getting.
That's
up
not nice at all. So what do you mean? You just take an Italian girl from her country and just call her monkey, and then you're not the daughter.
Kind of getting up to mischief, I guess, but she's not really. I don't know. But there's two guys in this house. There's a guy that she grows up with called that's Mr. Gilfil, actually, and it's his love story. And she really, really likes him as a friend, but he's in love with her, and she always says, no, unfortunately, I'm not in love with you, you know?
Oh, Lord.
But there's this other chap who is really just a bad sort of chap altogether. And for some reason, she loves him, but he's engaged to someone else. So he kind of has a bit of an affair with her. Now, they don't sleep together. It's Victorian England, but he courts her, you know? Oh, and then it's like, well, this is not good because you're supposed to marry this other lady. And we have this love square. And look, no one cares about this. No one's ever going to read this. So I'm going to spoil the ending. It's ridiculous. In the end, she takes a dagger one day. And she's like, this man is leading me on, but he has no real intentions towards me. And she walks out with a dagger to kill him. And turns out she finds him already dead. He's like fallen off his horse and had a fever or something. So he's dead anyway.
As happens every day, you know. So
yeah.
I mean,
and then
it sounds very Marionella dramatic.
It is a bit. It's very Marionella dramatic.
But not quite as good.
No, not nearly as good. So then she runs away. And she's just like, well, I'm done. I'm just going to run away and live my life, you know, somewhere. And she finds a servant and they bring her back and they say, look, it's okay. Here's the one guy. He'll look after you. Then she finally falls in love and marries him, has a baby and dies. So.
Right. I think I'd rather spend my time, I don't know, like marinating onions and watching for our dead.
That one was fun, but overall, not necessarily.
It's not fun.
Recommend. Well,
it's just bad parents advice. You know what I mean? Like, get some Italian girl and then call a monkey.
There's a bit of romance and drama, though.
Yeah,
romance and
you know,
drama.
We like you, but just you're not. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit Marinella dramatic, I suppose. Yeah.
Wow. The last book is better. The only thing is, there's one little mention where they start talking a lot about the doctors of the town. So if you want a little Middlemarch throwback. But look, the last book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we love that, right?
That's exactly what I mean now, yeah. Well, look, you know, I've never read George Eliot, but you're really not wanting me to read George Eliot. It was all of your reviews. I'm very sorry.
Silas Marner.
You're not putting her in it.
No, dude, Silas Marner was the only good one.
Well, I mean, but you consider it classy. So, I mean, you listeners, why is Middlemarch such a big thing? I'd like to hear an opinion as well. Is it following the Anna Karenina method? Let's get that phrase out there to the literary world. And then I hope the next book was something a bit more, you know, jovial.
The next book was amazing.
All right, so, good. What was it?
This is called Unfettered Journey by Gary F. Now, I'm going to see if I pronounce this right, Bengier or Bengier. And this was the original chief financial officer of eBay when they formed that company.
Oh, serious?
Yeah. So originally I was kind of worried, like, oh, is this going to be, you know, he's written a book. Is it going to be some kind of, you know, super capitalist kind of? No, it's not. It's a proper novel and it's brilliant. Now, it's a little bit longer. It's 500 odd pages, you know, so it's your just slightly above average length novel. And it's split into four or five parts. I really, really loved this book. So there's this chap, right? And what he wants to do is take a sabbatical year from his work to think about how do we get artificial intelligence to be real, right? Not just to pass the... This is set in the future, okay? So it's not just get robots to pass the Turing test or anything like that. It's like, how do we actually make them have that same level of like free will and self-consciousness that a human has? And he looks at these robots. This world has robots all around. And they're doing jobs. Even some of the police are robots, for example. You know, they're doing a lot of the work. And everyone has a PETA, which is this personal little robot thing that kind of follows you around and does things for you. And, you know, super Alexa, if you will. But what it means is the people are becoming more robotic themselves in the sense that they're not living normal human experiences. They're just relying on these machines for everything. So he turns his off eventually. And that's the opening scene of the book, is he shuts it down. And it keeps sort of begging him not to shut it down, you know, trying to look, almost emulate human emotions. But he keeps seeing that these machines don't have real emotions. They're faking it. They're faking it very, very well. Right. But they're faking it, he thinks.
Okay.
So he goes on this sabbatical year where he goes to a university to study and speak with people. And what does he study? He wants to talk about physics, right? And mathematics. And philosophy. So he realizes that these things are kind of all linked and he wants to look into free will.
Sounds a bit like our mutual friend.
A little bit about like our mutual friend. Playboy Alex, potentially.
Like
but, you know, we studied free will in university and it's a topic that I find very interesting.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, so he speaks to these different professors and they provoke his thoughts in these different ways. And he wants to find out, you know, about free will and determinism. And there's scenes of the book where we look at Socrates and akrasia, weakness of will. There's bits where we look into people like Hume. We talk about platonic, perfect platonic forms. You know, there's almost Huxley-esque dystopian bits where they're taking these emoticon bundles to make them feel better. They have these pitas and they also have nests that they're wired into. So you don't get a hangover because you adjust the settings on your device that you're plugged into all the time that makes you more hydrated. You don't feel sick because it automatically gives you the paracetamol or whatever. Like this, these machines that are basically, you've got these, you know, you're chipped and you're hooked up into these things that are just doing everything for you. But it's not ultra capitalist because you're not working. You're only allowed to work 12 hours a week. Because the robots are doing most of the work. Now, unfortunately, in this book, they do...
So it's not a dystopian novel.
Yeah. I think it's dystopian. Because they deliberately work more than the 12 hours. And I'll tell you why it's now dystopian, PJ. Because there's a lot... That sounds like a complete novel in itself. That's like a sixth of what happens in the book. He now meets a girl called Evie. And she realizes, like, this world around us isn't good. She's the Orwellian character. And he is as well. But she's revolutionary. You know, maybe he's the Orwellian character where he realizes things are wrong, but he's not doing a lot about them. She's, like, she's running a revolution.
Yeah, okay.
She's running a...
So he's the Wilson character, yeah.
Yeah. Good. Now, what happened is all the factories and all the production was actually turned over to the state and everything was nationalized because there was no need for people to work. So in theory, everything should be equality and fairness. But then they brought back the capitalism by bringing in levels. So everyone gets a basic sustenance, a basic level. But if you want more, then they bring back this tiered hierarchical society where certain people are higher levels than others. You're not allowed to talk to the people on a lower level than you. You're not allowed to hang out with them. And then you have these credits.
Right. It becomes dystopian.
And they have these credits that you can use for luxuries if you're on the higher levels. So everyone gets a basic life, but if you want to be better and be capitalist, you still can. So it's interesting that it's kind of a mixing. Wow. It's like low-level communism, but then there's like a capitalist veneer on top of it, you know? And Evie wants to fight this and bring down the system. And you're going to like this fish. It's brilliant. She takes him to her town. She lives in a different part of the town. And that's with more real people, family businesses, not run by, you know, barbers who aren't robots.
Yeah.
People like who are friends and who know it, and they've got like dark currency that they can use, and people who actually have a community, because he has no community. They live in this almost, he is the robot almost in the world he's living in.
Yeah.
She shows him the real world and real community. Unfortunately, there's also some kind of battle bot arena in her part of the town, which gives it a bad reputation. But we start to see a lot of these things about the reputation are all media campaigns. And we think we can't trust the media in this world. And there's a lot of propaganda, you see? And they go to a fancy soiree and they get arrested. Mm. And then the book moves into a totally different phase. But I should just quickly mention, because it's a bit you'll like, before they get arrested, they just go and chill for a few days and they go surfing every day and they talk philosophy and they hang out.
Wow.
They make love and go surfing and have a good time. And he gets to experience life.
That's a good
time. Canarian life, you know?
that's a good time. I like that combination.
Yeah.
Making love, surfing and philosophizing. That's good.
But then, they get arrested and they go. Well, essentially they get exiled, PJ. Another thing you like is that everyone in this book is essentially a vegan. Some of them eat fish, but more or less they're all vegan.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Cool. I definitely want to read this novel.
Because there's problems with the this is set post climate crisis, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm convinced people will become vegan, not just because of spiritual.
Now, what you might not like is these two particular main characters eventually have to give up their veganism because they're thrown out into a wilderness. They're exiled to an empty, barren desert in the middle of America post climate change, and all they can do is kill the animals like a radical.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. You know what I mean? If you're in a survival state, it's kind of more tragic, isn't it? Because they want to become vegan, now they're forced to do things they don't want to do, so it gives it a tragic element.
Yeah,
this sounds
it
like
is.
A great novel.
This is the
novel I would love
to
read.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay.
And the amount of philosophy they talk about, and I'm thinking about Hume's necessary connections and Socrates and all this different stuff, but there's stuff in it for people interested in AI. There's stuff in it for mathematicians and physicians, and physicists, sorry, as well as philosophers. While they're exiled, they meet another family and they form their own little, not a tribal community, but like really back to earth, no technology, which is crazy for these people whose entire lives is surrounded by technology. And the one guy's really gruff and he's kind of like, you're not having anything without trading. Everything's going to be equal labor, equal trade. But then as they become friends, he becomes really, really kind to them afterwards. He kind of hides behind that exterior, that facade of, you know, not being friendly. And there's a part where Evie starts thinking about life. And he says, do you mean the life of your two friends who were also exiled and possibly dead? And she says, no, I'm thinking about new life. I think I'm pregnant.
Wow, okay. Well, don't spoil it.
I'm not going to go any further. No, I'm not going to go any further. But that there's a lot more. The different four parts of the book, I mean, it gets really action-y near the end. Like, the different four parts are almost different types of, you know, genre twists almost, you know? It's really, really brilliant. Unfettered Journey. I really, really recommend it to anyone.
Wow, okay. And the author is called?
Gary F. Bengier, Bengier.
Okay, well. He had that career and then he did novels.
I know. Great. Wild, but so good and so informed, and a lot of work and a lot of research, you know, and a lot of intelligence went into the book, you know.
Yeah. Wow, that's great.
Well, before I'm just going to mention real quick, don't forget, everyone, please go to our Patreon and check out all of our other shows. And of course, booksboys.com is our overall website. I also just released two episodes of Forensic Friends on Patreon today as well. So there's lots of stuff up there. But PJ, why don't you tell us about your recommendation for this month?
Well, I recommend a very lengthy novel, which doesn't follow the Anna Karenina method. I think it's over 1,000 pages. It's called Eine Billion Dollar in German, and it's been translated as $1 trillion. It is in translation. The author is Andreas Eschbach. He is one of my favorite German authors. He's more of a sci-fi author, but he just reminds me a bit of the author you mentioned. He's not really the typical sci-fi author. He's more like, kind of like, he sees like a vision he has from the future, or a vision he has of how capitalism can go differently. And $1 trillion is a concept of someone investing 500 years ago during the Renaissance, and then waiting that the bank account gets opened 500 years later. And this guy in New York just one day gets notified that he has $1 trillion. And it's so much money that I didn't really know about proportions. But it's interesting. The book is huge. It's designed as if it were one big dollar. So it's all agreed. And each page, instead of being like one page one, it's page 1 million. Going onwards, and sometimes like there are little notes where it's like page 140 million. I think it's 140 million is like, you know, the set economy of a certain country, and then the further it goes, it ends up being like, I'm not even sure if it just ends up like talking about the countries or about a particular person having this much money. And it's basically about this guy. What is he going to do with all this money? Because he could change the world, basically. So John Salvatore is his name, and he's of Italian heritage.
Sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah, so this concept, basically, okay, I'm going to invest this money to change the world, but he gets involved with a guy who he thinks can help him out, but he's not sure if the intentions, are as good as he thinks. And it turns out, this is just a slight spoiler, but I think it's important, that although his intentions are really good from John Salvatore, he has so much money that he realizes as he starts yachting around the world and just living the billionaire's life, he eventually goes to the Philippines and he's shocked at the conditions. And he said, what is going on here? Who is your boss? Let me go to him. And they bring him to this place and they say, well, I'm the boss. And they say, well, who's your superior? And he said, well, actually, it's you. You own pretty much the whole world. And you've caused... But I find it interesting because I think people like, you know, Zuckerberg, do they even know, like, or even Jeff Bezos, do they know what harm they're doing? I don't like to think that they're just evil people. They're just clever people.
Dude,
but I think...
It is impossible to be a billionaire and be a good person. Impossible, no matter what you do.
Well, I think the intention is good, but there's so much going on. It's like a president, really. Like, I don't want to mention any presidents, but I don't know if presidents are evil. They're just, you know what I mean? Like there's some presidents where it's like, oh, he's such an evil guy, but yeah, maybe, but I'm sure the intention was.
You're not mentioning any names, and we're both thinking of the same person.
I'm not mentioning any names. Yeah, maybe particular blonde or blonde dark people.
Orange colored.
But I'm just saying, in general, I think it's kind of like the response is put on them, but they don't really know how much they're causing. They can't control it. So the book is about that.
Yeah, she's
really
good.
There's a love story involved as well.
And of course,
it's been translated. This one has been translated into English. So read it. Eine Billion Dollar in German, or $1 trillion.
So it's helpful when I'm in English.
Andreas Eschbach. It might be helpful to learn it. Yeah, unless you want to practice your German.
My recommendation, I've only read snippets of this, but it's actually a book belonging to Playboy Alex, and it's the Wadsworth Anthology of Drama, 6th edition by W.B. Worthen. And he just showed me this. The book costs about £200. So if you've got a lot of money to
fork out, I know it.
You know, buy it.
He's told me about it, actually.
Yeah. But I looked through it, and it takes different kinds of plays. So we start with like Greek and Roman stuff. We move through Renaissance stuff. There's a section for, Asian plays, European plays, modern American plays. We move through time and geographical location to study different plays. And there's little bits of information and context about the plays. And then obviously each one is a few recommended, a few plays are given that you can read in full. So if you want to read some theater and different types and really explore it, and you've got £200 to spend, it's a really, really good way in.
But he's told me that of that book many times. I think it's his most precious book. But it does sound like a very good, if you really want to get into it, world theater. And I'm, just so you know, I'm always informing myself about world theater, but I find it hard to find a good book that teaches me about everything. So that is a good investment. Mm-hmm.
But, and you know what? If you like plays, on our Patreon, we do Playboys and we talk about plays all the time, guys.
All the time. So, you don't have to spend 200 American dollars. You know, you can also
listen to us.
Listen to us talk about world theater. We talk about Norwegian plays, big into Spanish plays. Billy O. Shakespeare is a big one with us. He's very popular. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well,
and many other plays.
I think that's Irish us plays. Done. Next month, we are going to have our big 2-year anniversary. And
spicy.
Today we're gonna. Now there's no DJ to play the record. I'm gonna have to do it myself. But today, because Alfred's off, we are gonna close with an old song that we did together. And I think in around 2015, 2016, from the Nostalgia EP, "Journey of the Eagle." So we're gonna play that one, and I will spin the records myself. And we will be back in about a month.
See ya.
It shines so bright, just like the moonlight, soaring through the night, gliding though she might. She knows that she's the one for me, and she's my sands running to the ocean. She sees the moon shines down from high, and the eagle soars through the sky. twist, enveloped in clouds, a race through the night to see what's up ahead. Oh yes, I might just have to go and fetch it. Just have to go and seize what's mine. Oh, I just have to go. I'll take my time. I know this is my destiny. I'll get that girl and she'll come back with me. Dead warriors surround me. I see the face of the moon in the night. I see the eagle stop during its flight. What's coming?
Books Boys was presented by The Dean and PJ Burke in association with Thaddeus Penguin Productions. This episode was brought to you by our sponsor,
Help for Rappers.
If you would like to get in touch, you can email us at booksboys@hotmail.com or visit us at booksboys.com. The intro uses Driving in the 70s from the Of Soundtracks and Garage Bands EP by Trapdoor. And the outro uses Dog's Light by Bravo Max from the album of the same name. All music used is either Podsafe or used with permission.
If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/booksboys, get the show early and all of our bonus Boof Fan the Boys shows, and you can also check out our music on Spotify or Apple Music.
Thank you kindly for listening to us. Please tell your friends and come back next time for another episode of Books Boys.
Read some books!
Hello there! How are you? Jesus, I haven't seen this since the last meeting now.
I can't do it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.